Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Devon Insight Speaker Seminar for December. I'm your host, Graham Flynn, Chief Executive Officer of Devon Insight. Today's event is called Race Across the World and Beyond. Tricia Sale and her friend Cathy Rowe took part in the third series of the hit BBC television series Race Across the World. Tricia, who is severely visually impaired, and Cathy raced across Canada without smartphones, internet access, or credit cards, and on a very limited budget. Our guest speakers today are Tricia Sale, who's the Community Connection Coordinator for RNIB in Devon, and Cathy Rowe, who is a pharmacy manager who lives in Wales. Tricia is with me in the office. Good morning, Trish.
Good morning.
And Cathy is joining us on the phone from Wales. Bore da.
Bore da. Good morning.
This is such fun. I'm really looking forward to today. Before we talk about the TV programme Race Across the World, perhaps it would be nice to chat a little about your friendship and when you first met. Who's going to start us off?
Go on, Cathy.
Thanks, Trish. Good morning, everybody. How lovely to be able to do this. I first met Trish at my first day of school in Aberystwyth. We were 13. Mm-hmm. And that very first day, I was obviously quite scared about moving to a new school, what it was going to be like, was I going to have friends? It was quite a daunting prospect, and very quickly met this incredibly free-spirited, slightly rebellious person who I was in awe of, and just thought, wow, I really want to be friends with her. And we just clicked. We got on almost immediately and basically spent the rest of our teenage years living in each other's pockets and adopting each other's families. So it was a very, very close relationship right from the word go.
Cathy, your sons say you become a different person when you're with Trish.
They do.
You're a cool mum when you're with me, aren't you?
I think that they just see me, whether I just revert to being 14, I'm not sure if that's what it is, but I think in reality they see me relax, because they see me, you know, under normal circumstances, and as for many, many people, I'm sure, life is stressful, work is hard, you know, we all have battles every day of different nature, and when Trish and I get together, it just becomes so much more relaxing, and all those issues and problems, they just fade away, and we can just relax and enjoy each other's company and actually get very silly.
It does become a little bit mayhem at times, doesn't it?
Oh, total carnage.
And that's without any alcohol.
Oh, yeah, no alcohol needed. No, we can be disorderly without being drunk.
Exactly.
So dare I ask this question, who's the bad influence?
Me. I'm sorry. I get her into so much trouble all the time.
I think that's a bit unfair. I think the truth is that I become braver when I'm with Trish.
Mm. Oh, that's cool.
And I become a little bit more sensible when I'm with you.
Well, I don't know about that.
You do kind of calm me down a little bit.
Yeah, I do have to reel you in every so often.
Yeah.
So after your school days, what path did your careers take?
Well, I left school and went to college. So we kind of lost touch. I then started working in pubs and hotels and restaurants, and I did that for quite a few years up until 2003, and in 2003 I then joined a bank, worked in a bank for 20 years, and then left to work for RNIB. But we lost touch because everything was via snail mail, and yeah. When you go into colleges and stuff, you move around quite a lot. So yeah, unfortunately we lost touch. But Cathy has the determination of a very determined ant. And I'm not saying you're that small, I'm just saying ants are really determined.
Oh, right.
Okay, yeah, I was waiting for that explanation.
Yeah. I thought you said aunt rather than aunt. Right, okay.
And she found me via, what was it, Friends Reunited? Wasn't
yes,
it?
Yeah, I stalked you for quite a while.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. Kathy, you went down the pharmacy route?
No, not straight away. I sort of cut my career teeth in retail. And found that to be completely brutal. And via a couple of different areas, I ended up in financial services. And I've ended up in pharmacy because my husband is a pharmacist and we always dreamed of having our own business. And yeah, that's how I've basically come to help him run the community pharmacy. We've got two community pharmacies. Gareth is the pharmacist and he takes care of all the clinical stuff and I do everything else.
Wow.
in a windowless office?
Yeah, I do. I am literally sitting in a windowless office here now.
A bit like my office here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in the dungeon. Trish.
Yes.
Is it okay to talk a little about your sight loss journey?
Of course it is, absolutely.
Good. When did you first notice that there were issues with your sight?
Back in 2011, I was walking with Kathy actually, and I felt kind of like a little pop go in my eye. Sort of had a little bit of grit in it because my sight started getting worse. I got back to Exeter. I spent a week just rubbing my eye, thinking, oh, it'll go away. And eventually, one of my clients that was in the bank said, you need to go and see an optician, because she used to be an optician. I said, no, it'll be fine. She was like, no, seriously. So I went to the opticians in town and they sucked air and said, you need to get up to hospital. So I went to Exeter Hospital and they sucked air. And they did the, oh, I don't know, oh, and I'm thinking, oh, I'm dying here, because you don't know. They sent me to Bristol Hospital, who then sent me to Moorfields in London.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, don't worry, it's absolutely fine, you're going to be fine, we think it's this white dot syndrome, but you could be cured of that, it's absolutely fine. They did more tests and they worked out that it wasn't this white dot syndrome, it's chromoretinopathy uveitis, which is basically my immune system attacking my eyes saying they don't belong to me. So they said, oh, it's absolutely fine, it will only ever happen in one eye, we don't see this under the age of 70, you'll be absolutely fine, really slow progressive disease, but you know, you'll die before anything happens to your sight. 6 months later, I was completely blind in my right eye and my left eye then started deteriorating. Luckily, they've been able to hold it off. I do have some sight back in my right eye because of through steroids and other injections and other medication. But I go up to Bristol Eye Hospital every 3 months. I have steroid injections. I have all the usual tests done. So it's not as slow as they thought it was, and because they don't really know what's going to happen to it, because normally it's over the age of 70 and people get cataracts and macula, and unfortunately at that age people start dying off, they don't really know what happens to this disease. So yeah, I've had a few papers written on me and I've had people coming from all over the world poking and prodding me, but you know, it is quite a quick disease with me, unfortunately. But I've been stable for, well, my eyes have been stable for about a year, but maybe not me being stable, I'm not quite sure about that.
So how does the world look to you?
So the way I kind of describe my eyesight is, if you get a piece of meat, doesn't have to be any meat, stick it in some cling film, and then get a pen, like a biro or Sharpie or whatever, and then put dots over it. Take the meat out and then look through that cling film.
Yeah.
And just sway it back and forth. And that's what I can see or what I can't see. I can't see definition at all.
Okay.
So I can see the outsides of people. I don't see colours very often, unless they're bright colours anymore. So blacks, blues, greys, anything dark I don't see. I've got no depth perception at all. So can't see pavements onto roads, which I've fallen off a few times. Mm-hmm. But WL Alliance are now my favourite friends because I can actually see WL Alliance and I now know, there's a drop. So I've worked out little quirks. You kind of get used to your sight loss, what sight loss you've got. Eventually you kind of learn to work around it. But yeah, no depth perception, no colours, no facial features.
So navigation's difficult for you?
Very.
Recognising faces is difficult for you?
Horrendously.
Reading?
Can't read.
Maps?
No.
So sounds like totally the wrong sort of person to go on a challenge program racing across, I think it's the second largest continent in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe if I'd thought about it, maybe it might not have been a good idea. But obviously it was. But yeah.
Okay.
But then I had my best friend with me and she could do the bits that I can't do.
For those of you who don't know what Race Across the World is...
Where have you been for the
Where
last
have you
year?
Been? Yeah, well, can you explain to me, what's the premise of the programme?
Go on, Cathy.
So the programme is a challenge, and you start at point A, and you have to get to point B, which is from the previous series, roughly 12,000 miles away. And in getting to point B, you have to hit so many checkpoints, and you have a very, very limited budget. It is the same amount of money that it would cost you to fly, and you have no modern technology available to you, so no phones, no internet access, and you're not allowed to fly, so you have to travel by land or sea. And yeah, you're competing against four or five other teams, all with the same goal, to get there first.
So how did you first hear about this program?
Well, I'd watched Series 1 and Series 2 and absolutely loved it. I just thought the premises of the series and the program was fantastic. And it was end of 2018 was Series 2, and it said, if you'd like to... go on this show, please apply now at this email address. So I did. Not quite. I phoned Cathy and went, do you fancy doing this? And she went, yeah, okay. So then we applied.
Wow.
Yeah.
I hadn't watched it at this point.
Oh, right. Okay. So you said yes before it. Watching it. Great.
Yeah. Yeah. I had no idea what I was letting myself in for.
No, I did give you kind of a little overall of it, didn't I?
You did.
Yeah, we're going to race across a country, a couple of countries, and against some other people for a couple of weeks. With very limited money. And she said, will I have contact with family? I went, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, probably. But it's only a couple of weeks.
Right. So,
sorry.
You've done your online application. Did you have to audition for the program?
Yeah, so we did, we had to do a video of ourselves of why we wanted to be on it, and then, we had to send that in, and if they liked what they saw, then we had to go through some auditions and stuff. The one that I was very worried about is they need to make sure that you're of sound mind, and that they're not going to push you, and they're not going to break you in any way, mentally and physically and all of that lot. So because I suffer really badly with anxiety and stress and stuff, because of my eyesight, I was really, really worried that it was going to push me too far. I had a conversation with their psychiatric gentleman who went, you're fine, you could do it. And I was like, phew, thank God for that, I passed.
That duty of care is really important, and we'll talk about the contestants in a minute.
Yeah.
But I think there's a big responsibility for TV companies.
Absolutely.
For everybody involved, and there have been people who've been injured or have sued and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so 2 days before the race started, you still didn't actually know where the race was going to take place. Is that right?
Had no idea until, was it the morning that we flew?
Yes, yeah, just before we left for the airport terminal, we were told where we were going.
So you could have been going somewhere very hot, like Africa.
Yes.
You could have gone to China,
yeah,
Asia, wherever.
Yeah.
But you end
Norway.
Up, yeah, Norway. So how did you go about packing, preparing?
Well, I packed everything in the kitchen sink.
Yeah.
Whereas Cathy's more organised.
We were given a very broad temperature range.
Right.
Yeah.
So and that was it, basically.
They said pack for like -2 to +20 or something, wasn't it?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and then on the list it said, take a woolly hat and your flip-flops.
Yeah,
we had no idea in the world.
I'm going to read the trail for season 3.
Okay.
The trail says, Race Across the World was billed as an epic race across Canada, the second largest country in the world, starting in Vancouver and finishing in St. John's, Newfoundland. Mm-hmm. A distance of 16,000 kilometres, a race route that would take them to the edge of the Arctic, mm-hmm. via the waters of the Great Lakes, through 6 time zones and 7 checkpoints. I'm exhausted just saying that. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk a little bit. I've established that the budget that you had as a pair was £2,498.13.
Yes.
Okay.
It's not a lot, is it?
It's not a lot of money to go 16,000 kilometres.
No, and especially when you're having to rely on trains and buses. Which, when we went out, were that the fuel prices had just gone flying up, hadn't they?
Yeah.
The price of the tickets were horrendous. We worked out, what was it, something like £50 a day, wasn't it? Something like that, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Food and travel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And accommodation.
Yeah.
Yes, everything. Everything that we needed came out of our budget.
So if we needed a knife and a fork... So we lived off cream cheese and crackers for 8 weeks, but we needed something to actually spread the cream cheese on the crackers.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, we can't nick a knife. So we actually went into the shop and went to buy a packet of knives that was something like 99 cents or something. And they went, oh, just have it for free. So we were like, yes!
We were so excited.
So we've already established that you weren't allowed to take any digital devices that you could navigate or look onto the internet. But you were permitted to take a digital camera.
Yes. We were, yes.
Yeah, I'm really grateful that we did, aren't you? Because some of the pictures that we got were superb. We've got the memories and we've got, we've got the pictures in our minds. But it's lovely to look back at some of those pictures and go, oh my God, we actually did that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about the race. The race started at Stanley Park in Vancouver.
Yeah, let's not hang around there too long.
Yeah, well, no, we will. I know the trauma of this. I've just heard. You described it as PTSD. Was this the first time that you met the opposition?
That was when we met them, at the start line.
So let's go through who else was involved. So we've got father and daughter, Monique and
Laddie.
Yeah.
Now, tell me about Monique.
She's just beautiful. Well, everybody's just so lovely, but she described herself as, what was it? Daddy's princess, was it?
Yes.
Yeah, Daddy's princess, or spoiled princess, that's what it was, wasn't it? She kind of was to begin with, wasn't she? Soon that disappeared, didn't it?
Really,
it's a really
lovely,
interesting dynamic, wasn't it? Watching a father make his daughter grow up.
Oh, definitely.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Okay, the next contestants were brothers, Mark and Michael.
Lovely guys.
So sad. Their father had died.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd literally gone their separate ways, I suppose.
Yeah.
And it was very... one of the boys was very shy and quite reserved.
Mark was afraid of his own shadow.
Yeah. and Michael was a lot more dynamic and trying to push his brother forward. And it led to some very interesting TV.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't get to see much of them, did we?
No, we didn't, sadly. No.
Because
we just... We just spent some time with them when we were waiting for a ferry, and some time with them when we were at the first checkpoint. But other than that, we didn't really see them at all. But we kind of instantly liked them. They were both really likable people. Yeah. It's a shame that we didn't get to spend more time with them.
So the next couple are a father and daughter, Claudia and Kevin.
Yeah.
I think I don't know what the history was there. I assume there'd been a breakup of the relationship, the father with the mother, and the daughter. It was an explosive, let's say, at times.
Yeah.
Quite a tense relationship.
Yeah.
How did you find them?
They were really lovely. We got on really well with all of them, didn't we?
We did. Yeah.
They just had their issues with each other. That they needed to work through, and you kind of saw it on the TV, but they were just really genuinely lovely people. People look at these people on TV and think, oh my God, I don't like them, or I like them, but actually you only see a snippet of actually who they are. And they are genuinely lovely people. They just need to work on their issues that they've got with each other.
And the final pairing was husband and wife. I'm not sure I'm going to pronounce this right, but it's Mobeen and Zainab. They were really touching. And as the journey progressed, we learned that they had been trying to conceive for 6 years. And we'll touch on what happens later on. But for me, I found their story very, very emotional. How did you find them?
Loved them. Absolutely adored them. Yeah, really, really genuinely lovely people. Got on very, very well with them, became quite close with them very quickly. And still are, we're still very close with them and consider them both really good friends.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
She's got such a dry sense of humour, and so is he, and they're just so funny, aren't they?
Yeah.
You just can't stop giggling when you're around them. They're brilliant.
Yeah. Lovely, genuinely lovely people.
Yeah.
Let's take you back to the park. Let's start the trauma. Off goes the cannon. It's 2 p.m. in the afternoon, I believe, when you started.
Yeah.
Everybody ran off except for you two.
Yeah, we don't run in.
Yeah.
No.
I'm at that age. I'm talking for myself now. I'm at that age that I don't run. I don't even run for a bus because I know there's going to be another one in 10 minutes' time. So, yeah, we don't do running.
No, we don't do running.
I'm going to open up the trauma here. Everybody else turned right.
Left.
Everybody else turned left. You turned right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
How long did you spend in the park?
5.5 hours.
Five and a half hours lost in a park.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I think what was really difficult about it was we had no sense of bearing. So we had no sense of whether we were facing northeast, south or west.
Yeah.
And the map that we found on the lamppost also didn't give us any sense of where we were. So we thought that we were doing the right thing. And also we had no idea how big this park was either. So when I think I led us off down towards the water at one point because I thought, right, if we can get to the shore, I didn't know whether it was a small lake or whether it was the Lake Superior. I had no idea, not Lake Superior, but the Pacific Ocean. We had no idea where we were. And I think because of the direction that we went off in, it took us away from any car parks. So I think that it was a catalogue of errors basically, and we just ran around chasing our tails.
It was very funny.
Right.
Yeah, it wasn't funny for us at the time. I think I threw a water bottle on the floor and said, "If it's this hard, I'm not carrying on."
Oh.
And Kathy went, "Right, pick up your water bottle. We're not having any of that nonsense.
Absolutely. Yeah, get on with it."
So for those people who haven't seen the program, you race for days on end across Canada to checkpoints.
Yes.
At the checkpoint, there is a signing in book, a guest book, and the last 10 minutes of each program is seeing all of these couples and you're wondering who's going to get there first.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take you back to that moment when you sort of open up the guest book. It's gripping stuff for viewers. What was it like for you as contestants?
Nerve-wracking and, gripping for us. I mean, the first checkpoint, to be fair, we were all running down the beach together, weren't we?
Yes, we were, yeah.
Yeah, we were in the lead, weren't we? And then I fell over.
Yeah. Well, it was a very, we were running along a big, well, I say running, we were sort of walking with purpose down the beach. And, you know, for Trish, that's a really difficult surface to walk on.
Yeah,
and there was a combination of very soft sand, a lot of pebbles, and then the occasional rock that didn't move. And it was one of these rocks that kind of decided to throw itself in front of Trish, and you know, unfortunately, you really hurt your leg at that point, didn't you? So it was very difficult for her.
Yeah, and then somebody ran past us. I was like, no! So you get to the checkpoint and you open the book and you're like, oh my God, are we first? Are we second? What? Where are we? Where are we? Because you don't actually know, because a lot of the first checkpoint, we knew where everybody was realistically.
Yeah.
But the second checkpoint, the third checkpoint, we had no idea where anybody was. So we could have been first, we could have been fifth, we didn't have a clue. So when you're opening that book, you're just hoping you're at the top. And especially on the third one, wasn't it, when we went to Banff. We were just hoping and praying we were going to be first or at the top.
So one of the advantages of the checkpoint is that's where you're actually staying somewhere comfortable.
Yeah.
You actually have a proper bed for the night.
Yeah.
We do. Yeah.
I woke up the first morning and I went, I've been swallowed by pillows.
You said, I've been marshmallowed.
That's what it was.
Marshmallowed. Yeah.
So that opportunity to regroup, re-energise must have been great.
Oh, it was brilliant. And we got fed, and it wasn't out of our budget.
Yeah,
that was good.
So, yeah, we used to get out of the checkpoint on the race just like with a really full belly, because we didn't know when the next time we were going to eat. So we just shoveled it in for however long we were there.
So I'm not going to go into too much detail about certain parts of the race, because I don't want to spoil it for people who are going to catch up on iPlayer. But I'm going to read one of Paul Hannah's bits of narration. And it says, close to 90% of the Canadian population lives within 150 kilometres of the border with the US. In the less habited north, public transport is scarce. Mm. What challenges did this present?
Scarce is not a word. Non-existent, I think, would be the word. We used to rock up to the bus station on a Tuesday and say, right, what time's the next bus? And they're like, Thursday. I'm like, sorry? Thursday. No, but it's Tuesday, 2 o'clock. Yeah, no, next bus is Thursday.
This is a bit like Crenison and Timberton, isn't it?
But what did they kept saying about that stagecoach company?
There used to be everywhere we went and we were trying to get public transport, they used to say, well, the Greyhound used to come through here, and we were like, oh right, okay, yeah, but that finished 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And everywhere we were trying to get buses, they were like, yeah, well, you know, because the Greyhound doesn't run anymore.
Oh, God. So you had to embrace new methods of getting around. And the words I'm going to use here is cardboard signs.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was car sharing.
Yeah.
You don't do, you're not allowed to hitchhike, basically.
Yeah.
So we stood for hours on end in petrol stations asking people if we could have lifts.
Mm.
And we spent most of our time doing that, didn't we?
Yeah, a lot of it. Yeah.
And
yeah.
That must be quite challenging if that's not something you've ever done before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was. I was way out of my comfort zone. I don't like having to ask people to help me. I'm not very good at it. And so expecting somebody who didn't know us, who didn't owe us anything, you know, who for free, to expect them to drive us for 9 hours up the road, it just did not sit well with me at all. But they were happy, in a lot of cases, they were happy to do it. And that was, for me, it was like, wow, that's incredible. You know, you don't know us, and yet you're happy to drive us for that far. Because very quickly, we... very quickly we stopped measuring distance in kilometers because that doesn't really mean anything to us, and we measured the distance in hours, how many hours on the road was it going to take. So yeah, it was quite hard actually, just sort of going up to people and saying, hi, are you traveling north, south, east, west? And you know, we got more no's than we got yes, but when we did get a yes, we were really very excited.
Yeah.
So I was moaning the other day that I was doing a 4-hour train journey to London. But yeah. you had train journeys of, what, 36 hours, I think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kathy loved it.
I did.
Like, yeah, okay, I don't have to think about it then. I was like a bear with a sore head, wasn't I? I was pacing. Oh, I hate sitting still. And I was pacing back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And we didn't have a bed, so we were sleeping on the chairs. And Kathy is
vertically challenged.
Thank you. And she curl up like a cat on a seat.
Yeah, I can't.
No, I can't do that, being non-vertically challenged. So I had to spread out, which is not comfortable on a train. We'd spent 36 hours on this hot, sweaty train, and I decided at 2 o'clock in the morning to go and have a shower in the first-class cabins, which it wasn't against the rules, but, you know, it wasn't a done thing, so I did. And then I found somebody's leftover pizza, which I ate. I'm so hungry. Sorry, I shouldn't admit that. Really.
No, perhaps you shouldn't. So you've said that you had your limited budget,
yes,
but you could raise money by doing odd jobs for people. Ooh.
Yes, tell that's right,
about,
yeah.
Tell us about the kinds of jobs that you had to undertake.
Well, very quickly we learned that it was more advantageous to us to work for bed and board than for cash. Because with bed and board, we didn't have to pay for food and we didn't have to pay for accommodation. Whereas if we worked for cash, we still had to, well, in fairness, they used to feed us. If we did a job that we were being paid for more often than not, we would actually get a meal. But we still had to pay $150 or something similar for accommodation. And that would basically wipe out what we'd earned. So, we did quite a few bed and board ones, didn't we, Trish? And the first one was on the Bison Ranch.
It was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. We were eating. I mean, we were chopping logs and feeding the bison and stuff, which was incredible because they're really so close. But we were sitting there having dinner, and it was beautiful sunshine. It was shorts and t-shirt weather, and they turned around 5 minutes later, and there's a foot of snow. We were like, what? And it was like real proper Canada, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
When we got talking to these people, they would give us a lift the next day, or they'd find somebody to give us a lift.
Yeah.
So, it was definitely a good thing to do. Unfortunately, Muggins has got a big mouth and told other people, so, yeah.
So before we started today, you talked about you were having to muck out horses.
Yeah.
What was the worst job you had to do?
I don't know. Weirdly, I enjoyed all of them, but I think for me was cleaning out that lady's house, wasn't it?
Oh yes. Yeah, we helped an elderly lady who was also physically disabled, and we helped her clear out some of her house because they were having to move, and that was pretty hard work, wasn't it? And it wasn't a very clean environment either.
had about 16 dogs, and I was Kathy was cleaning the inside.
Yeah.
I was cleaning the garden.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely. Let's move on swiftly.
Yes, please do.
Okay, one thing that the program does very well is convey the vastness of the Canadian landscape. With each province is very different. So you've got mountains, you've got lakes, you've got forests. Yep. Now, Kathy, there's a lovely scene where you stop and take in the beauty of a frozen lake.
Oh, yeah.
Blue skies, there's no sound. You describe this as your epiphany moment.
Mm.
Tell us about that.
Yes, it was a place called Jade City, population 32. We had managed to get a job with a lady who owned two cabins on the lake. And when we were clearing the area that she'd asked us to do, I saw this lake and I just thought, right, I'm just going to have a minute. and I walked down to the lake and just stood there. And as I say, it was silent. It was perfect. And I described it as the perfect antidote to the stressful life that I have at home. And it was at that moment that I thought, right, so work's going to do without me for 8 weeks, hopefully. So if they can do without me for 8 weeks, they don't need me 5 days a week.
Yeah.
And at that point, it was when I decided that, right, I'm not going back to work full time. You know, my role within the company is in the office doing the finance, the wages, and that doesn't take full time. It's all the other stuff that takes up the rest of the time. So yeah, that was the moment I decided that I really, really didn't want to work full time anymore, and that I could spend more time at home, and so I could support Gareth in different ways, and just have some time for myself. So I did that. When I got home, Gareth and I had a really good chat, and I said, you know, look, I can't go back full time. It's exhausting. It's, you know, for both of us to be stressed out is not good. So, you know, I need to take a step back. So that lasted about 2 months.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and then the next catastrophe happened, and then, you know, I have to pick up all the pieces that are generally thrown around the floor. So yeah, but it did show me that there is more to life than
that. That's really good. Yeah. Now let's turn to Trish. I'm thinking here, you've already described how you struggle to see detail.
Yeah.
Visually impaired person in this fantastic landscape.
Mm-hmm.
But actually the scale of the landscape, you were able to see it.
Oh, it was shocking how much I could actually see. And I still described it, the air was so clean and so clear that actually things were a lot clearer. But yeah, the Rocky Mountains were in your face. The bears were in your face. Saskatoon was as flat as a pancake. Mm. So yeah, I could see a lot more than I expected. And yeah, I had a lot of help from RNIB before I went out. This is prior to working for them. Mm. And they said, look, take a digital camera because you can take photos and you can zoom in on them.
Yes.
So you can actually see these things. And I was like, oh yeah. Because you don't think of things like that.
No.
You do on your phone,
yeah,
but you don't think you could do it on a camera because you're going back old school. So yeah, it was amazing how much detail I could actually see out there because everything is so vast. I mean, the food portions were huge. So yeah, I could see those portions.
Now we just touched on it about the wildlife. Oh. Tell me about the wildlife that you saw.
Well, there were bears everywhere. Yeah. They were like vermin.
Really?
No, not that bad. But yeah, every once we'd got out of the main cities, we saw, they were the black bears, weren't they? Not the grizzlies.
We didn't see any grizzlies, unfortunately. Well, maybe fortunately. And luckily, we didn't see any polar bears either.
No.
But yeah, there were plenty of brown and black bears around, yeah.
And there was the eagles that we saw and the seals that we fed, that we shouldn't have fed. And we saw an Arctic fox. There was
a moose, a mummy moose with her baby.
Yeah. And the
loads of caribou.
Yeah. Buffalo / bison everywhere. Absolutely everywhere. They're roaming the streets and not streets, but the side of the motorway. But we saw a couple of the deer actually in city centres, didn't we?
Yes, yeah, the deer would roam in the towns.
Yeah.
And elk. The elk have beautiful, almost velvet-covered antlers.
Yeah.
They were stunning and huge.
Yes. So much wildlife. So much wildlife.
So, after 49 days and almost 16,000 kilometres, three teams, because two have been eliminated,
One was eliminated, one ran out of money.
Ran out of money, that's right. You're within touching distance of the prize.
Oh.
How did you find that last dash? And I think it was called Cape Spear.
Yes.
It was, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, we'd had a conversation the night before,
yeah,
and said, right, as soon as, because you don't know how many beeps you're going to get on the Garmin,
yeah,
we said, as soon as we've got the last beep that says run to the book or go to the finish line or whatever, dump our bags.
Yeah.
So we made that decision. So we got the last beep and we carried on running up the steps with our bags.
Now let me take you back to that. Let me take you back to that moment. We've talked about checkpoints and the guest book. You've got that mad dash up to the that up that hill.
Yeah.
And there's the book in front of you. Tell us about that moment.
Well, we ran to it and then skipped a little bit and got to the book and we put our sweaty menopausal hands on it. And I think I turned around to Kathy and said, it doesn't matter what it says on here or what where we are winners for just being on this amazing journey. And we so much out of it as well, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
So we opened the first page and it went, congratulations! Turn the next page to see if you've won.
Oh, no.
And it was like, oh my God. And we'd really built ourselves up to actually turning the book. Because we were sat there going, I don't want to turn the page. I don't want to turn the page. Because it was tinged with sadness as well, because we'd had such an amazing time. And we'd been together for 8 weeks and had, yeah, there were high and lows, of course, but overall we'd had such an amazing time together. And I think we both felt that we'd absolutely made the best of it. We'd done as much as we could and we didn't want it to end. Yeah. So it was real, real mixed feelings actually. But that final page turn. Yeah.
Warning to our listeners.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Whoop.
You turn over the page and what was the result?
It was empty.
Yeah, it was empty. It was me and Kathy, nobody else in front of us. We looked at each other and went, oh, where's the other
name? We just kind of screamed.
Yeah. Well, you screamed and I sat to the floor, didn't I? I was like, my knees went from me and I got on. Well, it looked as if I was praying, but I wasn't. I was just couldn't stand up. But Kathy turned around and went, "Way, wow!"
I just shouted.
it was unbelievable. I didn't think that for any second when we applied that one we'd get on it, but two that we'd end up finishing it, and three winning it. It's just madness.
Yeah,
middle-aged women.
Yeah.
Running across Canada and winning.
Crazy stuff. What was very touching was the response of the others when they said that you had won. And that came across that they wanted you to win.
Yeah.
They were really, it was lovely.
Yeah, it was really lovely. Zainab and Bean opened the book and went, yay! And everybody went, what? Oh, God, they think they've won. And then went, we wanted them to win.
Yeah.
it was so lovely. Yeah.
But we did actually say if we hadn't have won, either of the other two teams were very worthy winners.
Yeah.
Okay, so not everything makes the final edit of a television program.
No.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Is there anything that viewers didn't see which you have very fond memories of?
Oh, gosh, there's loads of things.
I don't know whether mine's a fond memory, but we were in Prince George and we cleaned out this lady's house and her daughter said, right, I've got these amazing things that for you to do. And one of it was doing hydro biking. And two pontoons with a push bike in between. And we cycled on the sea, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not very good on water. I'm fine in water, but not on water. Well, I was, the look on my face was horrific, wasn't it? I was like, oh God.
It was very funny. Very funny. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And we managed to blag a couple of paddle boards for free in Haida Gwaii, and, you know, that was brilliant fun. Again, Trish, not quite so much fun for her, but I loved it. It was brilliant. I got to drive a tractor.
You did.
So I was gutted they didn't show that.
It was quite funny. I was in the back hanging on for dear life, wasn't I?
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant. And also the other thing they didn't show, we got to spend quite a lot of time with tribes from First Nation.
Yeah.
And that was really valuable. We spent time with a lady in Jasper, and we learnt about how they use plants and what they use them for. And also we then spent time with a lady in Medibonagia Park, which is in New Brunswick. And again, it was very much coming back to how to look after the earth, really, and only take from it what we need. And that was really, what's the word I'm thinking of? It was very grounding.
Yeah.
I found that really grounding, and how it was, it's about your family and looking after each other and really cherishing your family and those who are important to you. And that's basically their philosophy. Okay. And I really enjoyed that. And they didn't show any of that. Whether there was a particular reason for it, I don't know. But it was a shame that they didn't show that.
It was a lovely moment, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Here's an interesting question. It's easy for television producers to capitalize or sensationalize difference when making programs.
Yeah.
How do you think they represented your sight loss in the program?
I think that they actually did it quite good, did it justice. They didn't make a massive deal of it. They didn't kind of, I don't know, they did it very tactfully. They were so good and so helpful, you know, when we were out doing things, and they were very much like, are you okay to do this? Are you sure you can do this? And I was like, yeah, fine, we'll find out. But showing it on TV, I was a bit worried because I don't use a cane very often, but I do when I'm in certain circumstances. So when we went to Ottawa and Montreal and Calgary, I used my cane because, again, it's more, I don't mind bumping into things and bumping off things because I do it all the time. But it was more to show people that I had a sight issue. So I was very concerned that they would kind of, people would perceive me to be fraudulent because I'm not using a cane all the time. But that's not the case, because there are people out there that have got no worse sight loss than I have. They don't use canes, they don't use dogs, they don't stuff. So I do use it occasionally, more now because I've lost them all sight. I think they did it very tactfully and very tastefully, to be fair. They didn't show a huge amount with me with my cane. But the very first episode that you saw, first leg, they said, oh, you know, are you okay to do this? And I was like, well, I can't really see the buttons.
Yeah.
And because me and Kathy know, or Kathy knows my sight loss and has been there throughout the whole lot, she was very much like, okay, well, I'll do the little fiddly bits, you do the big bulky bits. The same as when we were going up to Dawson City, you know, she did the driving. I did the map reading. That was hilarious. We didn't get lost because it was one straight line, so we were okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I couldn't see the map, so you know, I relied on Kathy to do that, whereas, you know, she relied on me, you know, lifting logs and stuff. So
yeah.
You know, she's the brains, I'm the brawn.
So before we're going to open up the call to questions in just a second, I've got one more question for you before we do that. And that's, what did you discover about yourselves and your friendship during this trip?
For me, I discovered that I'm actually worth more than I believe. I'm stronger than I thought I was. And I've now got a lot more self-belief, huge amount more self-belief. I was in, like I said, quite a negative environment. I started to believe that, you know, I wasn't worth this, and, you know, my eyesight would stop me from doing this, that and the other, and I can't do it because of my eyesight. Since doing the race, I'm like, actually, no, I can do this. Just ask me whether I can do it, rather than just presume, because I'm sight impaired or severely sight impaired, that, you know, I can't do it. So yeah, it's given me a lot more self-belief, and a lot more guts to go out and do stuff. Because, you know, you've got one life, you know.
Yeah.
If you bump into something, you're going to get a bruise, you know, carry on. I mean, it's not for everybody, I must admit. But I've always been quite gung-ho, haven't I, Kathy?
Oh, yes, yeah.
What about you, Kathy?
It made me realise that I'm a lot more resilient than I thought I was. and that I can accept help, and it doesn't mean that I can't do something. So that was quite important for me to learn, because I've always been very independent and self-sufficient. So asking for help is actually a good thing. It's not to be seen as a weakness. So I learned that. And it also gave me a completely different perspective on traveling and how to travel, and not just to fly out to a resort and escape there for 2 weeks and actually not see anything but, you know, the pool. So yeah, it gave me a completely different perspective on that as well. So I took an awful lot from it, an awful lot.
When you were saying about asking for help, it actually helped me as well with asking for help, because I'm really bad, aren't I, at asking for help.
Yeah.
And since my eyesight loss, I don't ask for help. I, you know, prior to that, I was like, no, I'm fine. That was my stock answer, I'm fine.
Yeah, yeah, it was, I'm fine.
Even though I've broken down and in the corner crying, I'm fine. But actually, it made me realise that actually I do need help sometimes with my sight, and I do need somebody to help me cross the road, or I do need somebody to help me look at a sticker on the back of a tin of beans or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So actually, it made me realise that actually sometimes it is good to ask for help, and that people are out there and they will help you. Because I was always like, oh, nobody's going to help me. They're going to think I'm weird because I don't look as if I've got a sight loss. But as soon as I say, look, I've got sight issues, can you just tell me this? They're like, yeah, that's absolutely fine. So people are friendlier than you expect, especially if you just explain to them, I'm sight impaired, can I have some help? People will always help if they can. So, yeah.
And for you, it led to a career change.
Massive career change, yeah. So I was working in a bank. After we left the race, myself, Kathy and Gareth did a 5-day trek up the Inca Trail up in Peru, up to Machu Picchu. And I decided that, you know what, I can do more than this with my life. I applied for a job within RNIB because they'd helped me so much with my sight loss, and I wanted to give back. I wanted to help the community and help other people going through what I went through, and just saying, look, you know, there is light at that end of the tunnel, and that there's not just myself here, you know, not just yourself, you're not alone, that there are people out there, people like Devon Insight, RNIB, Eyesight Cornwall, you know, there's so much help out there, and I want to spread that word, you know, and the best thing for me to do for that is to work for RNIB. You know, I was volunteering from them before, but I couldn't spread the word as much, and now that's what I want to do. I want to be able to help people with sight loss come to terms with it and get the help that they need to become as independent as they want to be, whether that's through RNIB, through yourselves in Devon Insight or whoever, you know, and that's what I want to do. And I love doing what I do, you know, I absolutely, it flows through my veins now, it really does. I just absolutely love it. I wake up in the morning and go, yay, what am I doing now?
Bless you.
Which is weird.
Why? Where I'm hoping that we're going to be able to unmute all of our listeners. Does anybody have a question? And if you could start by saying who you are. So do we have a question?
Hello, Trish and Kathy. It's Karen here.
Hi, Karen.
Hello, Trish.
I haven't heard from you for ages. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm
good.
Out of that journey, and all is okay, yes. I just want to say that this was the loveliest talk over 2 years that I've attended Insight Talk. It's just beautiful. So thank you very much. I've just my favourite of all time.
Thank you.
Yeah, my question was, did they give you any time after you won? You know, did you have a sort of week there? Were you allowed to have a resting time before you flew back, where you could actually feel yourself on holiday and not part of the race? That's my question.
Sadly not, Karen. No, sadly not. We had to fly home the following day.
Oh, right. Okay.
Our day night in St. John's, but yeah, that was about it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Have we got another question? Do we have another question?
I've got a question. My name's Helen.
Hello, Helen.
Hi, I thought you were a fantastic team, and I mean, as you say, all the teams were great. But I was really pleased that you won because you supported each other so well, and I also thought you showed great communication skills, overcoming your fears of talking to strangers and begging for lifts. That was significant. But my question is, of course, the thing that you don't see on the TV is that you're being followed around by a camera all the time. So how was it to have a camera person with you at all hours of day and night watching what you were doing?
I mean, we got used to it very quickly. It just became part of the whole journey. So it was fine, really.
They became part of the family, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. Very much so.
Hello.
Hello.
Could I ask a question? I'm sorry, I got called away at about 11 to someone that's doing some work for me, so I've just put the phone back on. Is it okay to talk?
Yeah, go on, David.
Sorry. Yeah, my name's David. I live in Exmouth. I'm severely sight impaired. I've got a guide dog who's just retired. I've had him 9 years.
Aww.
And I would just like to say I've been registered blind at Moorfields, funnily enough, for nearly 30 years now. And I would just like to admire you, both of you, in fact, more so to you, Trish, because of your severe sight loss, like myself. And well done for what you did.
Thank you.
It's absolutely marvellous. You know, you become an ambassador. My dog's got an ambassador coat now. He's retired, my guide dog. He's called Tarka, by the way. We have him on the telly, but not as much as you, probably, on Spotlight TV. And I picked up one thing. Sight loss, you get a lot of stress and anxiety. A hell of a lot of it.
People
don't understand it all the time. They say, oh, you're in a mood again today, David. I said, it's not a mood. I just get stressed out. Certain things stress you out. And the other thing was, Trish, with your sight loss, I don't know how you manage to see certain things unless you had them all explained to you, but I find that is a real loss to me in my life, not to be able to see those things now that I used to when I was fully sighted. Those lovely scenes that you spoke about, the lakes and the animals, it must be quite stressful for you not to be able to see them fully and properly, only to have them explained to you. Yeah.
Sorry, I was quite lucky that I've got my best friend Kathy with me, and she did describe a lot of things.
Yeah,
she, you know, when we're out walking a lot, she will do the old tree roots, my head, you know, stone, this, that, and the other. So she does describe a lot. And when you actually watch us on TV, we are holding hands quite a lot, and it's because she's guiding me that way.
I
used to believe that sight loss owned me. I now own my sight loss. You know, I'm in charge. It used to be in charge. I'm now in charge of it. So, it's taken a while, but, it's getting there.
Yes, I've been like it, a lot, as I said, nearly 30 years now. I've lived with it now. But
you just need to take one day at a time, 1 minute at a time, and just, if you're having a good day, acknowledge you're having a good day. If you're having a bad day, acknowledge you're having a bad day.
Just one other thing, very quickly.
Yeah.
Did you have any other thing with you, Trish, to say that you were visually impaired? I know you're not walking around a town, but you were out in the open. But did people know, apart from the people in the that were doing the challenge?
I took my cane. I used my cane occasionally, but no, I didn't. Again, if I was doing a job, I would explain to people that I am sight impaired or anything like that. But no other gadgets or anything.
No, it's best to get out front with it, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
I'm just wondering how a guide dog would have managed all that.
He probably would have loved it
or probably got eaten by an animal or something. Anyway, it's lovely to talk to both of you, and well done once again.
Thanks, David.
It's a privilege talking to you.
So we're nearly at past. I could talk for another hour. For those of you who haven't seen the programme Race Across the World, it is available on the BBC iPlayer.
Yes,
please. There's also a fantastic reunion programme too, which was very emotional. I just wanted to go back. We talked about one of the couples, and they were the husband and wife, Mobib and Zenit Third. And there was a very touching part in the program where they were talking about they couldn't have a baby.
Yeah.
And they had a lift with a guy called Brent.
Yeah.
Could you just tell us, share that part of the story? Because it was so great.
Oh, Brent was beautiful, wasn't he? So they clearly actually had a lift prior to Brent, who was adopted. When they got into the car with Brent, this was the second person that they'd been with in a run, and he was adopted, and he's adopted children. It just showed, you know, that you don't have to have your own children to love them.
Yeah.
You love your child, whether it's yours, whether it's somebody else's. It's like Kathy's boys. I love them so much.
Yeah.
They, to me, are my children. Mm. And no, you can still keep them, Kathy, because, you know.
Oh, thanks. I'm quite pleased about that. I quite like them.
Yeah, they're good boys.
But they are good boys.
Yeah, they're the closest to me that I've got as children. And, yeah, I have literally adopted them as my children. And I love them dearly. So you don't actually have to be able to love them so much. So
I think for me, what part of the legacy of the program was that people had time to think and reflect about their lives.
Absolutely.
So whether it be career changes or for them to at least take that step rather than IVF or something like that they were thinking, oh, there is a possibility.
Thinking outside the box.
The space of that journey gave them that time.
Yeah, because everybody's so busy in their lives, they don't think about thinking a different way of thinking. You know, I mean, we spent hours going, can we have a lift, and eventually we started saying, oh well in fact, if we just ask them where they've been, we know if they're going in the wrong direction. So it's thinking outside the box, and that's what it gave Zane and Emma Bean. It gave them time to think about, you know, we can't conceive, let's have a look at adopting or fostering or anything else. So yeah, it does give you time to have those reflections. Really
well,
does.
I'm going to say, Trisha and Kathy, like Karen, I found this the most fun. It's been a lovely event. And the recording, when we have to wait for it to be processed the other end, but we will get it back. I'll edit it. It will be on our website shortly. Can I remind everybody that we hold a chit-chat call every Wednesday morning on this telephone number, so you can join us to talk about anything and everything. And our next speaker event is on Tuesday, the 9th of January, so in the new year, and it's Making Community Energy Work for Everybody. And Exeter Community Energy was established by 8 local people in 2014 who were brought together by Transition Exeter's Energy Group. Their vision is for renewable energy projects to bring about practical change in our community by addressing energy-related challenges. So we're joined by Tara Bowers, who's a Healthy Homes Project Manager and the Exeter Community Energy. It's not just about Exeter, but talk about all things to do with heating and lighting and all that sort of thing. So that's our next event. So I'm just going to say thank you, Trish. Thank you, Kathy. That's been fun.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Graham. Thank you. It's been lovely.
It has. And thank you very much for inviting us. It's been really lovely to get to know you. And thank you very much for all the callers and all the questions.
Yes,
thank you, everybody.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.